You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello, welcome to the Daily Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and it is the 3rd of July, 2025. And, you know, we've been talking about the same things over and over again, and I want to move elsewhere. I want to talk about Armenia. I've dealt with Armenia like in fits and starts over the years. But things have gotten so bad that the prime minister there, it's like it was a really bad comedy skit of a color revolution hack. Someone who just went over the top with it. There's no other way to explain him. He is very much like a comedy skit wherever he goes. And many of you may not even know that Nagorno-Karabakh is no more. Christian areas have been taken by the military of Azerbaijan, and of course their Christian heritage has been completely destroyed. And their revolts against the Armenian government have rekindled in Yerevan, actually today, against Nikol Pashinyan. They've been a regular feature in Armenian life for years. Back in 2020, Armenia was defeated by Azerbaijan for the first time in a century over the obscure Nagorno-Karabakh region. But this military humiliation, especially its cause, has tremendous global and ideological implications. It comes down to the regime's installation of this incompetent, arrogant, unstable, unpopular, and uneducated Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan back in the so-called Velvet Revolution in 2018. The guy, he doesn't seem to know anything about actual politics, economics, or military policy. His whole sole purpose is to harm Russia, allow Turkey to colonize Christian areas of the Caucasus, and to permit Western oil companies to make profits from the Caspian Sea region at Russia's expense. Now, the last time I talked about him, I thought it was more recent, but it actually was 2020. And lots have happened. Lots of things have happened since 2020, and all of it's tragic, including the total destruction of Nagorno-Karabakh, or Artsakh is its more proper name. And I hadn't realized it had been that long since I had dealt with that topic before. But listen, Ukraine, Israel, they dominate their front pages. The equally horrific situation in Armenia is being ignored. The media can never be permitted to decide what is important for me, for any rational person. That itself is a weapon used against people that it ignores. It ignores them for a reason. Outside of the region, outside of the people who live nearby, few have any idea what's happening. And even if they did, we've mostly mythology and AI deepfakes. I'm not kidding you when I'm saying that Pashinyan, he is a comic version, except he's not really funny, a comic version of a color revolution, someone who the West has installed. Armenia is tiny. The struggling country is surrounded by enemies determined to destroy it. The Azeris, which means people from Azerbaijan, and the Turks. Turks want to create the so-called Zengzur Corridor. See, because the way this geography is laid out, it's Turkey, Armenia, Azerbaijan. So that means Turkey and Azerbaijan don't share a border. This corridor would be that border. And note, all of these places border Iran. And so there is a Azeri exclave called the Nakhchivan Autonomous Republic within Armenian territory. So it's the opposite version of Nagorno-Karabakh. It's a small 12-mile-long border with Turkey, which would then give the Turks unimpeded access to Azerbaijan. They don't share a border otherwise. And that could be, as far as expansionist is concerned, all the way, dealing with Turkic people, all the way to Soviet Central Asia and even Western China. Now, this isn't new. Armenia's been struggling for a long time, but there is a difference. Pashinyan wasn't there. Armenia is, or was, one of Russia's main allies in the area. People tend to forget about it, but I always bring it up. Russian soldiers in Armenia is the only thing that kept the Turks or anyone else from destroying the country. But unfortunately, it was in 2018, the Color Revolution, the Velvet Revolution, took place, and that's gone forever. In 5 years, the Pashinyan regime lost a 1,000-year native land as Nagorno-Karabakh or Artsakh, and strategically damaged Armenia's position in the world. Azerbaijan began treating Artsakh like Israel treated Gaza. Starting in December of 2022, they blockaded it from the outside world, which is in violation of the 2020 ceasefire agreement and everything else. The Azerbaijani government seized territory around the Lachin corridor, blocked any kind of alternative bypass routes, and installed military checkpoints. Azerbaijan also sabotaged critical civilian infrastructure at Artsakh, gas, electricity, internet. It was a massive humanitarian crisis that no one knows anything about. You know, these are Christian, weirdo Christian, and just really 120,000 people. Essential goods were nowhere to be found. The Red Cross was blocked. Widespread shortages everywhere. Electricity, fuel, water, emergency reserved. And then in 2020, the Azeri offensive against the area, it was no more. Azerbaijan, with Western backing, arrested the former leaders of that exclave. And once Artsakh was gone, the entire population had to migrate to Armenia. There's a handful of old-timers that are still living there. The place is being bulldozed, and has been being bulldozed for a long time since then. Russia alone saved Armenia from complete annihilation. There was a time when Russia controlled all of this region, prevented the Ottoman and later the Kemalist forces from completing their horrendous Armenian genocide. Russian protection had been crucial for this tiny country. Even after the collapse of the USSR, it remained. Again, 2018 changed everything. No one really trusted this coup that took place with Soros and BlackRock money. But the goal of this color revolution was more sinister than we had realized. It had nothing to do with combating corruption. The following 2 years were almost the entire destruction of Armenia as a result of this revolution. I mean, prior to 2018, Azerbaijan was regularly engaging with skirmishes with the local Artsakh forces. It had been going back and forth, very much like eastern Ukraine. And each and every time, the Russians had intervened. They did it in 2014, 2015, 2016, they did it again in 2018. But then, Pashinyan was installed in power, and he started a campaign of sweeping anti-Russian reforms to cut Russia off from Armenia. He even shut down Russian language schools, wanted to join NATO, the EU. The man is obviously controlled by outsiders. He's a buffoon, Azerbaijan and Turkey, who are very close allies, coordinated the attack in 2020 that took Artsakh or Nagorno-Karabakh entirely. At least for a while, it was only the Russian peacekeeping forces that prevented the area from falling entirely, but that it has fallen entirely. So on September 28, 2023, the Artsakh president, Samuel Shah Ramanyan, signed a decree stating that all state institutions would be dissolved January 1st, 2024, bringing the existence of this ancient republic to an end. And the Azerbaijani flag, the Azeri flag, was raised over the former Artsakh presidential palace. Pashinyan is a bizarre human being. He just blamed Russia for everything, despite him being anti-Russian. He said he denounced Moscow for not going to war with Azerbaijan at a time when Armenia wouldn't do it. But notice at this very same time, the new authorities allowed the U.S. to drastically enlarge its embassy in the capital, Yerevan. There were 2,000 employees there. Tons of intelligence operatives. All enemies of Russia and Iran. It was the perfect place for them to be. Back in 2020, I wrote a paper. Many of you remember it. Reasons for Armenia's defeat in the 2020 Nagorno-Karabakh War. The body count of the Velvet Revolution. And as far as background is concerned, I want to summarize it. Pashinyan is pushing Armenia into the Western orbit. He can't even justify it. He doesn't know. It was openly financed by Soros. He even wanted to sign the obligatory European Union Association Agreement. Armenia was, up to that point, a part of the Russia's Eurasian Economic Union. If you pulled Armenia away from that, that would make trade, not just with Armenia, but Iran and much of Central Asia, a bit more difficult. Russia is, of course, Armenia's main trading partner and market. It would destroy the economy. Because God knows, Armenia doesn't produce anything of interest for the EU. Its chief exports are coins and pearls. I couldn't believe it when I saw it, but it's true. They want free trade, so like Ukraine, she'd lose all her value-added industries and become a very minor supplier of raw materials. Following the ceasefire agreement, Pashinyan has been the subject of huge, huge protests all over Armenia, which continue to this day. In fact, today has been, it may even be front page today. Armenians believe that their prime minister is working with her enemies. Specifically, he's working with NATO to deliberately lose a war with Azerbaijan in order to bring the country closer to Western backers. This is his sole purpose. This man couldn't win an election to anything. He was installed. And the same thing happened in Georgia in 2003, bringing the mentally unstable Mikhail Saakashvili to power. So Russia and Iran remain Armenia's only friends. Armenia may be headed towards civil war, albeit today with much less territory. The Prime Minister Pashinyan was a part of the Armenian National Congress. The group's website, which I quoted years ago, makes the agenda very clear. It says the party will continue its integration and active work in European and world liberal structures. It continues to privatize strategic sectors of the economy and, importantly, the consistent implementation of antitrust policy, the inadmissibility of quotas in the market, imported goods, the emergence of monopolies, with the application of severe sanctions provided by law in case of unfair competition or monopoly practice. Now, despite that deliberately technical language, that is what oligarchy wants. Monopolies mean any kind of state enterprise, which in turn will require the sale of strategic oil and gas pipelines and all technologies to Western firms. A total regime of free trade would lead to the destruction of all locally based business and make any protection of Armenia's economic independence a crime, which he already said. that goes far to explain the war in Nagorno-Karabakh and its outcome. The fact that his party regularly met with the American ambassador just before and during the war is significant. Now, when I say this man wasn't elected to anything, you can never convince me otherwise. In 2008, Pashinyan received 1.7% of the vote in a presidential election. In 2012, 7%. Because Armenia has a proportional representation system, it permitted his party to take a seat in the legislature, him personally, actually. He couldn't function at all without Western money. But fast forward to 2017, something called the Way Out Alliance received almost 8% of the vote, which is probably the most his movement ever received. He changes parties and movements every few years. I should tell you something. 2017 was also the election where he promised citizens of the capital 10,000 Armenian drams if they voted for him. Even with that incentive, though, they were still in single digits. So rather than admit defeat, though, he organized mobs and tried to attack the Capitol building, claiming, believe it or not, the elections were rigged because they didn't go his way. When he was about to be arrested for this, he ran to the American embassy, where he wasn't all that popular. The ambassador at the time, Marie Yovanovitch, made it clear that Pashinyan was the most radical. It was this tiny alliance of liberals. He always sought violent solutions to problems. He wasn't smart enough to do anything else. So what the regime asked him to do, his numbers weren't getting over, 7%. So in 2017, he said, let's provoke the state to take violent action against your demonstration, which at that time was about 1,000 people, and get arrested. The West would then make him a martyr, thus making him into a household name. Otherwise, no one would have ever heard of him. And here's what I wrote 5 years ago. Laughably, after his installation of the prime minister, the latest American-supplied poll says that 98% of Armenians support his political movement. So he went from single-digit numbers a few years ago to 98% last year? At 1919? As early as May 1st, the Armenian parliament refused to vote Pashinyan in as prime minister. They could at least have used a more popular politician, but like Joe Biden or Hillary Clinton, the regime deliberately shows its power by using a man least likely to be elected to anything. With all this, he became prime minister after the color revolution. It's clear that he was ordered to rig the war to go against his own country. Starting in 2018, he supported giving Azerbaijan pieces of Nagorno-Karabakh. But when he was leading revolts in the street, he became a hardliner all of a sudden. He just told his audience what they wanted to hear. But as soon as he became prime minister, he instituted IMF-based austerity, which he never mentioned before. So the only reason he's a prominent politician at any level is because he's backed by Western money and Western propaganda. So there's no doubt Pashinyan is immensely unpopular and requires Western money and rigged polls to be elected to anything. There was a snap election of 2021. Polls had him in different regions of the country, roughly about 25% of the vote, which I think is way too high. Somehow, though, he won with 70%. You have to include his coalition partners for that, but that's still... The elections were blatantly rigged. Gallup admitted that. 2021, the man had just lost an entire region of the country due to his incompetence to the Muslims. How could he have been elected to anything? No one could ever win an election in such a case, especially in such a small country. Pashinyan deliberately derailed any negotiating processes. He said, he makes these stupid statements. He said, the Karabakh problem was a territorial dispute, not a question of self-determination of the nation. It doesn't make any sense because there's 120,000 Armenians living there. But hearing that, Azerbaijan assumed that military action wouldn't receive much resistance. The Armenian author Yoakim Hagopian wrote this. At the time, all evidence at this point suggests that there's a dirty hand of the U.S. NGOs and State Department pushing to take advantage of the internal discontent inside Armenia to further weaken Russia and its Eurasian Economic Union by, at the minimum, creating unrest and chaos in Armenia. If this is so, it will be clear soon enough. Well, it was so. It was a humiliating defeat once the war began. Armenia had been building up his forces radically. And it's weird that Armenia defense or intelligence didn't notice this. This came out in RT, which, by the way, is RT is edited by an Armenian. This is written by Paul Robinson. Russia has officially adopted a position of neutrality in the Nagorno-Karabakh dispute and called on all sides to settle their differences peacefully, meaning supporting the status quo. Since that status quo favors Armenia, in reality, the position has meant supporting Armenia, a posture reinforced by Armenia's membership in various multilateral initiatives supported by Russia, normally the Collective Security, Treaty Organization, Eurasian Economic Union. The conflict in Nagorno-Karabakh thus indirectly pits Russia against Turkey. It also undermines the common narrative that claims that Russia seeks to undermine democracy and promote authoritarian forms of government. After all, Russia's ally Armenia is a democracy, where Turkey's ally Azerbaijan is not. Well, that's of course true, but not for those reasons. Armenia is an ally of Russia, or sort of. Russia's relations with Azerbaijan have not been bad either. Russia is heavily invested in her oil and gas infrastructure. Artsakh also is not the only place where Russian and Turkish proxies are clashing. Syria, Libya. But there is evidence, shocking evidence. The Prime Minister of Armenia deliberately took steps to lose the war of 2020. He saw a growing invasion force in Azerbaijan with Turkish assistance. The Russian press wrote on this substantially. Russian intelligence was sending stuff to him all the time, which he, of course, ignored and eventually cut them off entirely. Armenian intelligence had one purpose, and that was to monitor Azeri military movements. Still, the Armenians, quote, had a poor idea of the location of enemy military facilities and acted ineffectively in the air defense sphere. But how can that be? They had first-rate equipment. The entire Armenian defense unit is dedicated to that very purpose. They're neighbors. Most in the Armenian Defense Department said the government was totally unprepared for this military situation. Pashinyan promoted incompetent men to important posts and fired those he thought might oppose him in the future. The Azeris knew this very well. He also knew it would compromise Armenian military readiness. After the Velvet Revolution, four heads of the National Security Service, three chiefs of the general staff, and three commanders of the Karabakh Defense Army were replaced by Pashinyan's men. Those who won the first Nagorno-Karabakh War were fired from their posts just before the war broke out. Under Pashinyan, three additional intelligence leaders were replaced. One of the men who replaced them had zero competence and was a purely political appointee. They're just friends of his. That doesn't just happen unless someone is instructed to lose a war. You also had, 6 months prior to the war, the Armenian general staff had mass purges of officers trained in Moscow. In one instance, the pretext for the firing of the chief of the general staff was that at his daughter's wedding, believe it or not, I'm quoting here, the rules of conduct during the coronavirus pandemic were not followed. In other words, he wasn't wearing a mask. Come on, this is certain proof that Pashinyan was installed by the West solely to ensure an Azeri victory and to break a strong Russian ally. Armenian Defense Department was in chaos. They failed to respond entirely. The Israelis were financing the Azerbaijan military. They formed two elite shock corps operating under a unified command. Massive warehouses built closer to the front. Fuel supply system. You could see all this with binoculars. Yet Armenia did nothing. Armenian intelligence did not or would not convey any competent assessment of Azerbaijan's weapons purchases. Everyone else was talking about it. Yes, it's true, Russia has been trying to lure Azerbaijan from Turkey's orbit for many years. But more importantly, the Armenian military, purged by the Prime Minister and Mossad, deliberately cut contact with Moscow. But Russian intelligence was key to their understanding of what was happening over the border. That's hard evidence that Soros, as Prime Minister, was trying to lose this war. Artsakh had an air defense system that was never touched, was left to rot, became out of date. The Armenian state refused to respond to the growing purchases of Turkish combat drones. In fact, Turkey is one of the leaders in that field. Baku purchased hundreds of Israeli and Turkish drones, but their system in Armenia was irrelevant. It was useless against these new weapons. Everything was outdated, and that was done on purpose. There were very few air defense systems in Artsakh regardless, despite the full knowledge of what Azerbaijan was doing. And the only plausible explanation is that the new government was deliberately trying to destroy the country, and no other explanation makes sense. The Turks are even importing foreign fighters. Full military support to Azerbaijan. But the defeat had nothing to do with that. It was Armenia's prime minister destroying its defense department. And then after all this is done, adding insult to stupidity, the prime minister blamed Russia for the defeat. Yeah, it was a deliberate attempt to lose a war. There is no other explanation for it. Pashinyan was financed by the Soros organization. He came to power believing in 2018 that the previous government was corrupt and autocratic. He used all the buzzwords of the regime. He has never won a legitimate election. He was authorized by the regime to create a dictatorship to defend his illegitimate power, very much like Ukraine, and to crack down on the protesters, as many people have said, is unprecedented. It's never been seen before. There is no freedom of the press there once he's there. Any opposition to Pashinyan's rule is quashed. Total destruction of the free press, despite the fact that this guy was allegedly an editor of a tabloid many years ago. Yeah, he was, actually. Pashinyan was thrown out of journalism school. And he founded the Armenian Times. But anyone who opposed his suicidal policies was arrested. Now, Pashinyan tries to say that he was kicked out of Yerevan University for his political activities, but no, he just didn't show up. But when he was in opposition, he's screaming for a free press, but it's always the case with the color revolutionaries. Once they gain power, they quickly smash all opposition. And there's no exceptions to this. It wasn't that it was around that time that he said that Armenia was ready to join the European Union as early as 2024. In this period of time, this suicidal government managed to lose 20% of its territory, turning Russia into an enemy, destroying that alliance. Yet the regime tells us that he won elections and he remains popular. Well, that's impossible, and no sane man would rule that way. Therefore, he's under foreign control. Speaker of the Armenian Parliament, part of his coalition, Alan Simonyan, says that his country is ready to take a course towards European integration, which will provide it with the greatest security. Which, by the way, doesn't make any sense. No normal person would actually believe that. And of course, in Pashinyan's 7 years there, Armenian security has collapsed entirely. No normal person would want to join the indebted and dying EU unless they're paid to do it. These men offer zero evidence that joining any Western alliance would help Armenia, because there's none that exists. They're spouting lines from a script. It's not crazy to say that Armenia is in danger of being overrun by Turkey and Azerbaijan, a situation that this government deliberately brought about. And really, protests have been ongoing since 2020. And you don't have to be knowledgeable about Armenia to see that these are absurd. Now, the church. The church is aware of this absurdity, and unlike in the West, the Armenian Apostolic Church has taken action. So you have the bishop of the northeastern Tavush diocese, Archbishop Baglat Galatsinyan, who demanded Pashinyan's resignation. He had massive, gigantic rallies in Yerevan as well as his own area. The Archbishop stated this: "They called Pashinyan, we give you an hour to resign. I'm ready to meet within this hour and discuss the conditions for your resignation. You no longer have any power in Armenia. You destroyed the entire security system from the first day of your rule. You turned the church into a target, struck a blow at the pillars of our identity, denied the face of the Armenian genocide, and destroyed it." He denied the Armenian genocide in Armenia. And he's elected this stuff? He denied the fact of the Armenian genocide in flippin' Armenia. And he's a popular politician? Everything is rigged. Let alone losing Artsakh. By the way, the bishop has been arrested on terrorism charges. The Catholicos, the head of the church in Armenia, Karikin II, he gave his blessing for the procession of the archbishop, been leading since May 4th of last year, which started in the Tavush region. In fact, all the dioceses are involved in this because Pashinyan was giving away Armenian villages to Azerbaijan. The heads of all the other dioceses of the Armenian Apostolic Church joined the protest, starting processions from their respective regions of Armenia. The mother see of Echmiadzin, the governing body of the church, said, "We consider processes carried out under the pretext of border demarcation in the Tavush region of Armenia to be extremely dangerous without comprehensive and guaranteed solutions." But of course, Pashinyan, he didn't just reject the church, he mocked it. Because, again, no man doing this in Armenia could win anything. One of the bishops was Bagrat was floated as an alternative candidate for prime minister. He refused it. So this time last year, the relationship between the Armenian church and Pashinyan's government was nothing but hostile. His government, of course, did exactly what Zelensky does: endless threats, shutting down churches, arresting everybody. Pashinyan accused the church of acting as a foreign influence agent since historic times. Even the parliamentary speaker I mentioned before, Simonyan, wanted to start taxing it. And members of his party, the Civil Contract Party, whatever party he's a member of now, wanted to start seizing church property for various state needs. The Armenian police last year, for the first time, tried to keep the Catholicos, spiritual leader of the Armenian church, from attending a national ceremony in Sadarapat, which was the government cited security measures. There was now a war between those two entities. 2 months ago, though, Pashinyan said no, he should have decisive authority in the selection of the next Catholicos, and that all candidates, he should run background checks on them to make sure they're okay. He called the church a dusty closet full of junk. All these crude comments by clergy members. I think, what did he say? I think it was today. I saw in CNN, he said he's going to take his pants down in front of the church. I mean, he's like a Shashkavili. This is bizarre. Of course, it's all the same. He has no legitimacy. He's tearing the country apart. This is why ethnic churches, by the way, are so important. So, the Armenian prime minister started rounding up his opponents. Started with one of his main ones, wealthy Samuel Karapetyan. And that arrest prompted the head of RT, Margarita Simonyan, to, I guess in a tweet, she said this: "Since returning from Turkey, Mr. Pashinyan, or should I say Effendi Pashinyan now, has unleashed a campaign of smears, searches, and threats against the Armenian Apostolic Church and its head, Catholicos Karikan II. To Armenians living in their homeland, what are you waiting for? For your sons to be beheaded? Your daughters to be enslaved into harems again?" But he wasn't done there. Pashinyan had, just a few days ago, June 27th, 2025, Archbishop Michael arrested for planning a coup. He's rounding up his opponents all over the country. In fact, when Archbishop Michael was going to be arrested, thousands of protesters kept the police from arresting him, and successfully. But he eventually just walked and turned himself in. Archbishop Bagrat, as I mentioned before, was arrested with 14 others. And among those 14, there's many more, of course, members of the former Nagorno-Karabakh parliament, David Galstian, retired colonel there, Miglan Mashudian, Moses Sharbatian, who was assistant to the Archbishop Bagrat, a whole bunch of writers and bloggers like Armin Alexenian, and many others. And their only crime, really, was leading protests against the illegitimate and liberal leader. The protest got so big against Pashinyan, it was, you know, in the Telvush diocese, it was from Telvush to Yerevan, massive rallies, these huge snakes going, you know, snaking through all the cities. And that's what caused Pashinyan to say that he's using terrorist methods throughout the country. But he's not even pretending that there was any crimes committed. He said these are preventative measures. So now he can arrest people because they might do something. Now, according to the text of the document, not so much the indictment itself, but the way that the prime minister considered it, from July 23rd to August 1st, a campaign to ridicule Pashinyan and turn him into a popular meme should be carried out on social networks, including TikTok, while other information resources will create a background of anxiety and disappointment, I guess. Between August 2nd and the 11th, it's planned to spread targeted disinformation about secret negotiations with confirmation from Russia's partners, according to the authors of this terrible plan. During this time, Pashinyan would lose the trust of his supporters. The start of the active phase of this plan with street protests starting in August 22nd, so that the movement reaches its peak by Armenia's Independence Day on September 21st. This was his mindset here. That was the basis of his roundup. He doesn't want to be a meme. But if you remember, that's exactly how Pashinyan was chosen to take power once he received no more than 6% in an election. So, in other words, protesting this lunatic's policies is the same thing as protesting against Armenia itself, or the government itself. Turks and their vassals trying to finish the infamous genocide in Artsakh. 100,000, at least 100,000 native Armenians were driven from their homeland there. Starting in 2023, still going on now, the Azeri occupation forces are destroying the heritage of this Armenian territory. And all of this, of course, being accepted and promoted by the Armenian election winner. If this isn't proof that Pashinyan is controlled by outsiders, well, maybe this will help. Maybe this will help. Drago Bosnich wrote the following. In a report published by the reputable Weekly Blitz, the daily's chief editor, Salah Uddin Chaudhuri, I think it's in Bangladesh, revealed extremely disturbing details about U.S.-run biolabs in Armenia. Citing Armenian sources, Mr. Chaudhuri reports about a measles outbreak that's now affecting hundreds of Armenian children. According to local media, the latest incident is a result of Pashinyan's regime support for the Pentagon's bioweapons program in that country. For the U.S., the unfortunate country is nothing but yet another pool of guinea pigs. And it was precisely Pashinyan who enabled Washington to exploit the Armenian people. As a result, they are now exposed to unprecedented public health hazards. Armenia is just one of a string of nations affected by America's incessant aggression against the world. Now, there have been plenty of journalists who have been arrested and removed. There was one from Bulgaria, Dilyana Gaetan Dzeva. He was she was removed from Bulgaria, which is, of course, EU, in 2018. But if any leader allows these biolabs, like we see in Georgia, of course, Ukraine, Armenia, that is the height of corruption. That is proof that this man is totally under the control of foreigners. And the U.S. doesn't even deny this anymore. They might use euphemisms, but they don't deny it anymore. Newland talks about, you know, biological research facilities. But the Pashinyan regime has no problem exposing the Armenian people to these dangers. Armenian media reports recently at least 786 people have been infected as a result of an outbreak of a new kind of measles linked to these American labs. Of course, the government refuses to disclose any information here. Since the color revolution in 2018, at least 12 biolabs have been established in the South Caucasus, all staffed by personnel sent from the Pentagon. And all of them, by the way, located in the vicinity of residential areas and schools, which is no coincidence. Worse yet, just a few months ago, Pashinyan's defense minister, Shirin Papikyan, signed an agreement with the U.S. to establish another lab in Gyumri. Those ruling Armenia are aware of the problems. They do it anyway. Well, that same city, though, is where the 102nd Russian military base is to be found. 4,000 soldiers, tanks, combat aircraft, located in Gyumri. Part of why the Pentagon wants access to the area. Pashinyan wants the base removed, despite the fact that it's the sole reason the country has never been invaded by Turkey. He wants to establish yet another bioweapons facility that can cause deadly epidemics, not just in Armenia, but elsewhere. Because we know that the Pentagon's Defense Threat Assessment, Threat Reduction Agency is present in that country. They deal with deadly biological materials that can be used as weapons. But so long as this government's in charge, the U.S. can do it as it pleases. And the fate of the Armenians means nothing. We're talking about the most severe, extreme pathogens and diseases that wouldn't have any normal presence in Armenia. Ebola, monkeypox, the Marburg virus, Eastern equine encephalitis, and a whole bunch of different variations of COVID. No one could see these labs unless you're, you know, authorized by the Pentagon. And guess who's going to pay for it all? Russian military has been warning about this for years. And it was in January 2024 that Russia's nuclear, biological, and chemical protection troops revealed the massive scope of these horrific programs. And that's what led to the murder of its leader, Lieutenant General Igor Kirillov, as a result. After 2023, capital of Nagorno-Karabakh, Stepanakert, was totally depopulated. It was a ghost town. Now, there's about 3,000 Islamic settlers that have been sent there. One of its streets, by the way, was named for Enver Pasha, one of the Turkish leaders responsible for the Armenian genocide. So they're not kidding around. What can the Kremlin do? It couldn't do much to save Artsakh, since the Armenian government would have refused all assistance anyway. But yet another war zone that the regime would have exploited to the maximum. And Russia could not afford Turkey going right into the anti-Russian camp. It's out of the question. Around the time that Artsakh fell, Pashinyan was not really involved because he was busy planning a Snoop Dogg concert at the time, which is quite symbolic. This was the propaganda to be promoted in Armenia. Now there's a massive increase in American military and pop culture presence in the country. The FSB border guards left the Zvartnots International Airport Now you have U.S. soldiers showing up in the Flight Radar 24 on August the 2nd and 3rd last year. Two C-17 Globemaster heavy lift transports. So it depends on who you read, but between 30 and 50 men arrived in Armenia and were soon sent to the critically important Syunik region. This is dangerous. Part of the reason is so that the U.S. troops would have a unique opportunity to directly observe the Iranian military deployed in the area, monitor its missile systems. This would be a huge escalation on the part of Yerevan, and would likely destroy its previously good relations with Iran. So now it has nobody. You have other Russian bases at Godis and Sisian. The only guarantee that Armenia survives at all. The U.S. wants to control this area for a reason. And if it allows Turkey to get its way, it's something that will keep Turkey within its orbit and not leave NATO. Not to mention bring instability throughout the area. But then, it wasn't that long ago, Pashinyan said that the betrayal of Artsakh was a positive development for Armenia. He said, "It is often said that we have lost Nagorno-Karabakh. In fact, writers such as Drago Bosnitz have often thought about the issue, but his conclusion is the following. We have not lost Nagorno-Karabakh. We have gained Armenian statehood. This is the truth." That's what he said at an session at the Armenian parliament. He said, "For many years, the Nagorno-Karabakh issue had been used as a leash to prevent Armenia from developing. The Republic of Armenia is developing, and I am more optimistic about its future than ever before." He used to attack, you know, Artsakh people, threatening Armenian sovereignty and being a destructive tool against national independence. He said any attempt to continue the Karabakh movement is destructive. This is why it was invaded. He even rejected back in March of this year. He said it shouldn't even have been pursued. His logic, of course, is laughable. There's 120,000 people who used to live there. Which is another way of saying that he has no support in that country whatsoever. You have every possible organization. There's so many new organizations being founded. And most of them have been peaceful. But mass censorship, horrible police responses, arrests, all with the full support of the EU. Then he visits Ankara? He is a very bizarre, almost comic type of leader. He called Artsakh a burden. Get rid of it as soon as we possibly can. And blame Russia for. He is pro-Turkish. Can you imagine being pro-Turkish? Back in 2023, September, Pashinyan delivered a speech where he claimed that he is leading Armenia's independence defense movement. Blamed Russia for what was going on there. The responsibility for such a development of events will fall entirely on Azerbaijan, which has adopted the policy of ethnic cleansing of the peacekeeping forces of the Russian Federation in Nagorno-Karabakh. I don't know what the peacekeepers have to do with anything. But that region, I remember reading about that region in college when the Soviet Union was collapsing. I still have all those New York Times newspapers, the original edition that says, Soviet Union no more, whatever party removes itself from power. Nagorno-Karabakh was always on there. It was always a thing. But I guess not anymore. He even says crazy things. He says, "I am the Prime Minister of the Republic of Armenia. Therefore, I lead the independence defense movement. The future of Armenia depends on one person, and that one person is me." He is very much like a Shishkavili type. He is your typical neurotic weirdo. If it turns out that he's a Jew, I'm not going to be all that shocked. He says he's going to remain as prime minister or there'll be no Armenia. A guy from Cairo in the BRICS analytic portal, Ahmad Adel, wrote this. Pashinyan's speech was signaling to the system that Yerevan is moving very aggressively in breaking ties with Russia. This is an especially dangerous maneuver, and since Armenia is not the Alps, with states like Switzerland, Liechtenstein, Austria neighboring each other, but rather in a dangerous area of the Caucasus. It's been the crossroads of trade, religion, and battle for thousands of years. The region has become more of a danger because Pashinyan attempts to change his country's alliances and strategic thinking without securing any guarantee from any Western country, including France. So only encourages Azerbaijan to take action. Moscow must be careful not to overplay the Turkish-Azeri card, because NATO views Turkey as a way to subvert and weaken Russian and Chinese cultural and economic influence in Central Asia. For this reason, the Atlantic Alliance fully supports Turkey's vision of becoming hegemon in Central Asia. And of course, that be at the expense of Armenia. All the former leaders of this country had a balanced policy, increasing the number of allies and limiting the number of enemies as much as humanly possible. Small countries do this. It's part of game theory. But now, under Pashinyan, they don't have any supporters anymore. They don't even have Western allies. Armenia is too weak to do much about it. What the hell is going to happen to the economy? Armenia, given its geographic position, has been so integrated into the Eurasian Economic Union for, you know, many, many, many years. Many goods from Armenia are sold to Russia, where they're actually wanted. Armenia's economy is based on this trade and points east, not to the west. Many cheap products are delivered to Armenia from Russia, although Armenia does have a substantial trade deficit. But one of the most important sectors is energy. Any long-term development in Armenia of Armenia has to be based on cheap Russian gas, and there's no alternative given their location. Liberalism in the region is trying to separate Armenia from Russia. And that would be the immediate collapse into third world status. There's a reason Pashinyan is interested in Snoop Dogg concerts. The regime's media has already reached the country's students and youth. The main goal is to create this globalized Armenia that will look to the regime for its future, as the old Soviet states did many, many decades ago. That was his job. Americanization is a result of decades of propaganda. Armenian youth look like Western young people. They don't want to work for their country, but they migrate elsewhere. After the decision to turn west, zero positive developed in that country. More and more people are leaving. The West wants nothing Armenians produce. It used to be an important part of the Soviet economy, but under oligarchy and globalization, it will be reduced to absolutely nothing. Prices are rising, salaries are low. The situation is not expected to improve, but Pashinyan, being controlled from outside, has no desire to change. The West is glutted with goods. It's overproduced to a huge margin. Nothing the former Eastern Bloc could produce is wanted. So the entire integration projection is irrational and contradictory. The only way to make it happen is to have the regime agents in power. They read from the scripts like all of them. And that means the total destruction of these economies. That's the disaster we're talking about in this little country. One of the strongly nationalist religious countries in the world, on the border of Europe and Asia. Thank you everyone for listening, and I will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.